is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, welcoming Gregory Copley, Defense and Foreign Affairs, back from the travels in Oceania, his native Australia, the world of Perth, but also talking about the island sovereign states across this vast landscape. In particular, we're focusing on the Pacific Islands Forum. I learned from Gregory it was founded in 1971. It has 18 members: Australia, the Cook Islands, Federated States of Micronesia, Fiji, French Polynesia, Kiribati, Nauru, New Caledonia, New Zealand, Nine, Palau, Papua New Guinea, Republic of Marshall Islands, Samoa, Solomon Islands, Tonga, Tuvalu, and Vanuatu. That is a way of describing what the contest has come to between China, the People's Republic of China, and all the rest, the United States, Australia, and its allies. Gregory, you were most recently in Fiji, and there is a program in front of us that has been presented to the other states that are part of the dialogue partners. That pretty much describes Europe and the Axis of Resistance, dialogue partners. But you spoke with the Prime Minister in Fiji. What is the ambition of the Pacific Island Forums at this point, given the contest with the People's Republic of China, given the sometimes underhanded conduct, I note the Solomon Islands, for example? What is the program? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, the Pacific Islands Forum has been progressing over the years. It's been productive in that it's brought all of the smaller island nation states in Oceania together, and some of the large ones like Papua New Guinea, but it hasn't really coalesced as a strategic framework. And what the Prime Minister of Fiji has proposed is a thing called the Ocean of Peace. Now, he raised this briefly at the United Nations last September and in Australia at another forum, and it was starting to get some interest, but didn't put any meat on the bones. So I was able, in the few days that I was in Fiji, working with Prime Minister Rumbuka, who's a very old friend. I've known him for many decades. And we put together a group to put some flesh on the bones, if you like, of the Ocean of Peace concept. And that's developing really well as literally a new commonwealth, which would give the whole Ocean of Peace, if you like, population of those countries, including Australia, a unified area of cooperation. It would actually give it some meat in its interrelationships while protecting the sovereignty of the member states, but it would at least give them an overarching regional voice in the world of negotiations. What we're seeing is that as the United Nations loses its traction as a global governance forum, we're seeing regional governance forums much more responsive to the real needs of the regions. And not in all cases. What we're seeing is, for example, the African Union losing its way in many respects, but some of the smaller African multinational bodies are gaining in some aspects. Now, what Sitiveni Rumbuka's proposal has done is to start literally putting the Commonwealth of sovereign Oceania states, for want of a better phrase, together, so that they might get international diplomatic recognition as a body, much like European Union has, so that it does have greater negotiating capability, because it represents a vast geographic region in the world, one of the largest regions, if you look at it holistically, with enormous resources, not just in Australia and New Zealand to a lesser extent in terms of minerals resources and energy, but it also has a lot of undersea resource capabilities, a lot of ocean and as well as ocean capabilities, including particularly fisheries, and it needs to protect those regions. But it's also got a lot of on land mineral resources in, for example, Papua New Guinea and Fiji itself, for example. And if you look at one of the new states which is emerging from Papua New Guinea, namely Bougainville, that Bougainville and Fiji, for example, have enormous copper resources at this particular time. So there are all of these things which are leading this to become a new forum. Now, Prime Minister Rambuka's approach actually has come alongside a move by some very senior Australian leaders in industry and politics, very quietly putting together a new policy for Australia. And where does Australia go in the coming decades? And that policy is shaping up around a document which is called a Pax Oceania. In other words, to define a regional peace, for want of a better word, not unlike Pax Romana or Pax Britannica, Pax Americana, and so on. And this has been created or conceived largely out of a real concern as to where the world is going in its architecture. We're likely to see a collapse of the PRC, People's Republic of China, economy this year. It's already having a strong impact on Oceania itself. And there's some belief that if mainland China, communist China, contracts and collapses to a substantial degree, whether or not the Communist Party remains in existence is debatable. But if that threat to the rest of the world from Beijing diminishes, a lot of the regional states in Oceania believe that the United States will diminish its interest in the area or its leadership in the Indo-Pacific region. And that's why both the Ocean of Peace concept and Pax Oceania are coming together to look at creating this new geopolitical entity, which embraces far greater internal trade between the regional states, some 20 of them if you start to expand it, and possibly could include even Indonesia and some of the ASEAN countries. But it really starts to look at a post-China world in which the United States may take less interest in the region.
Right now, Gregory, the U.S. is tied up, for a better metaphor, I'll come another day, tied up in Ukraine, tied up in the Red Sea, tied up in Gaza, certainly tied up in Jordan, Syria, Iraq, and facing an existential crisis, some fashion, with NATO. Looking entirely in another direction, is that influencing decision-making in Oceania, in Australia?
Well, there's certainly a feeling that that Oceania itself is not cohesive and it's not working in its best interest. It's been inefficient by its own recognition, but also it believes that it's now suffering from neglect by the major powers, and also there's less prestige in the authority of the major powers, whether it's the United Kingdom, France, United States, Russia, or the People's Republic of China. So there's a feeling that it's time for these countries to step up and take responsibility for their own future. And this is very much tied to the weakening of U.S. prestige, number one, and the threat of a weakened U.S. dollar. So there's a huge amount of maneuvering going on at this stage. And I'm not saying that the U.S. is not stepping up to this. The U.S. is, in fact, looking at this Ocean of Peace initiative. President Biden gave strong support to Prime Minister Rambuka from Fiji, even donated an aircraft for the Pacific Island Forum's leaders to use to step up their regional cooperation and ability to have face-to-face dialogue, because communications among the states in that region are notoriously poor and need a lot of attention. And this is something that Australia should have been addressing but has not been addressing.
And the King's visit, the information from London today is that the King believes that the visit to Australia and New Zealand will remain on his calendar. What role can the King play in Oceania through this vast territory?
Well, the King is critical because he's revived the prestige and dynamic of the Crown And we can talk about this separately, but King Charles has put real energy into the role of the crown as head of the Commonwealth and as head of the United Kingdom and as and in his role as King of Australia and King of New Zealand. And I think we discussed when I was in Australia the fact that that King Charles may be asked to restore the monarchy in Fiji, which was a very loyal a member of the Commonwealth and a very and had the sovereign of the United Kingdom as sovereign of Fiji. I think under modern conditions, Prime Minister Rambuka would like to see King Charles back as King of Fiji in a separate title from his former role, the Crown's former role in Fiji as a sovereign of the United Kingdom, basically as head of state of Fiji. So this would be something strengthened. And, of course, when King Charles is due to visit the region in October, it would be for the Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting, which is going to be held in Samoa in October. And he also, at that time, during that visit, would go to Australia and New Zealand for the first time in his capacity as sovereign of each of those separate countries. So this is going to be symbolically extremely important. The role of the King in bringing the Pacific Islands Forum into some degree of unity will be, I think, profound. And the Pacific Islands Forum itself is having its own annual forum in August before the King gets there, and that'll be held in Tonga, which is itself a monarchy, as you know. And so it's going to be a very significant visit and with a lot of political impact. Even though the King himself is above day-to-day politics, this will start the process of healing. And in Australia and New Zealand, it will really, I think, give a strong support to the public, which has profoundly rejected left-wing politicians' attempts to create republics in both Australia and New Zealand.
Albanese government, is it on board for the Pacific Island Forum? Does it lend a hand? It's the biggest economy, the biggest land in the region.
Well, the Australian government is always willing to participate in that and has been a benefactor of most of the Pacific Island Forum nations. However, it's been giving aid, which has not necessarily been appropriate or wanted. They've put a lot of money into the region, but have been tone deaf to the needs of the region, and to the point where many of the states, Fiji included, have suggested rejecting some of the aid as being inappropriate and actually leading to economic inefficiencies. For example, Fiji wants to reestablish what it once had, which was a very viable and capable shipbuilding industry to build ships for trade within the Oceania states, the smaller states, and the Australian government has been resisting that, because saying no, we'll just give you stuff, or you can buy it from Australia. Well, that's not within the spirit of the Pacific Islands Forum. Neither is it helpful, because all of the warships which Australia has donated to all of the Pacific Island Forum nations have been basically white elephants, because they've been too expensive to run. They've been inappropriate for the sea state, which prevails in much of that southwest Pacific region. And as a result, these vessels, which are costing a lot to run, are tied up or at anchor idle because of the costs and inappropriate nature of these vessels. But Canberra has been tone deaf to that. So what we're seeing now is new leadership coming from the Pacific Islands themselves to take charge of their own destiny, and Australia will need to adjust to that. And this is not just a problem of the Albanese government. It was a problem of the Liberal National Coalition governments before that, and it's primarily because of the rather complacent and paternalistic nature of Canberra's bureaucracy, which in a sense is a microcosm of the bureaucracies we've seen in Whitehall and in Foggy Bottom in Washington D.C., where the bureaucrats think the foreigners need to be grateful.
We're going to stay in the Pacific Basin for just an item in the Philippines, and then we're headed to the Atlantic Basin. Gregory Copley, Defense and Foreign Affairs. I'm John Matthews.